Morning. Adam and Eve. What a rich and compelling text. This story's got everything. Talking serpents, disobedience, fresh fruit, naked people, and of course, temptation. My affection for this story probably took root most deeply during high school, when my sophomore year, Goshen High School performed the musical Children of Eden. Like its better-known counterparts, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, or Godspell, Children of Eden puts to music biblical stories. In this case, the first 9 chapters of Genesis. Even though my role was only a member of the chorus, / giraffe, I loved this musical. It was the Ark. We were all animals. Caitlin was in it. She was great. It brings the stories of Genesis to life with complex characters and very catchy songs. I listened to the CD again, 17 years later, and I still love it. I'm particularly drawn to the relationships between God and Adam and Eve in the garden. God is portrayed as a loving, caring creator, father, who seems a little naive and prone to angry outbursts, but has some very tender songs. He sings, "What use is a universe with no one to give it to? Not a hill of beans until you pass along your genes. That's what it means to be a father." It's very sweet. And then the character of Eve has this great song, which I will not sing for you, but I will have Eric play in a second here. It's called The Spark of Creation. This is before she eats the fruit, when she's wrestling with who she is and all that she's feeling inside. Hopefully. I'm still not going to sing it. Now, interestingly, Rachel Jeanette, who played this role in high school, just posted on Facebook this week, re-listening to Children of Eden, so grateful that this happened to me, what a formative show it was for her also, and thanking the teachers at GHS who put it together. I think it really will happen. You can also find it on YouTube. But it's pretty central to my theme here, so. So we'll wait. We don't have a CD player in the sound system, so we're doing it on the computer. Well, the point is, Eve talks about this tiny spark of creation that God left inside of her while she was being formed. The spark of creation is flickering within me. The spark of creation is blazing in my blood. I hope you can still hear it. I'll go on to say, I love this idea that God left a part of God's self, the divine spark of creation, inside each one of us. This desire to create and invent and imagine. These are gifts. These are the fingerprints that the divine left on us as we were molded into being. God's curiosity and creativity grafted on as we were formed. It's not a defect. It's part of how we are made in God's image. So for a long time, I have celebrated Eve's radical curiosity, her sparkiness. Even her disobedience had a sort of edgy feminism to it. Just checking again. I'll go on. Well, we've got the whole gang on it. I wish I could juggle. I'll go on. It's a full morning. We have communion coming.
Be-a, it sounds full of wind and mist, doesn't it? It means other things exist, doesn't it? Be-a, it says, Adam, leave your list, doesn't it? Father, why does my head feel this joy and this dread since the fingers. I've got a bullet in the back of my brain. I've got a hunger burning inside me. Cannot be denied. I've got a feeling that the Father who made us, when he was kindling the pulse in my veins, he left a tiny spark of a fire smoldering inside. The spark of creation is flickering within me. The spark and with life into the mud. The first inspiration, the spark of creation.
That's good, right? That was worth waiting for. The spark of creation is blazing in our blood. So anyway, I celebrated that spark of creation. I loved it. I loved the musical. But now, as a parent of four-year-olds, this story feels a little different to me. I still emphasize the creativity and the curiosity, but now I also emphasize the disobedience and that there are consequences. It feels like a helpful framework for talking to my kids. Adam and Eve disobeyed and there are consequences. You disobey and there are consequences. And that's true, right? That's part of why we still tell this story. And I also wonder, why in the world was the tree right in the middle of the garden? Why was it there at all? If you don't want your kids to eat holiday M&Ms all day, don't leave them sitting out in decorative bowls. Candy is not a decoration, Grandma. Anyway, that's why we put a lock on our pantry door. Although, to be honest, the kids have now grown tall enough that they can reach the lock and unlock it and help themselves anytime they want to an entire bag of dried cranberries. So, I mean, I kind of get it. I'm not going to get rid of all of our food just because they can open up the pantry door. They could choose not to sneak a whole sleeve of Ritz crackers right before supper. So I'm drawn to this story, both because of what it says about us. We are curious, we are creative, we disobey, and what it says about God. One of my favorite details of this story that too often gets overlooked and also got left out of our today's scripture in verse 20 is the clothing that God makes them. It's at the very end of the story and in a very important detail, the garments made of animal skins. I think it says something very important about who God is. As they're leaving the garden, God clothes them. Even in the face of our disobedience, God provides what we need. Life is going to be hard for Adam and Eve outside the garden. But the consequences that God lays out for them are not punishments or curses. God only curses the soil and the serpent. They are descriptions of the difficult realities that Adam and Eve will face. God makes them animal skin clothes because that's what they need to survive outside of the garden, but not outside of God's care and protection. Gerhard von Rad writes, "For the first time, we see the Creator as the preserver. That means that God accepts humans as those who are fallen and helps them prepare to live outside of the garden. God responds to them as changed people." Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote, "God's activity keeps pace with man." And this is not in response to a heartfelt apology or any act of contrition on Adam and Eve's part. They may be abashed about their newly discovered nakedness, but they are not apologetic. Unlike the psalmist, who writes, "Then I did acknowledge my sin to you, and I did not hide my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin." But Adam and Eve did not acknowledge the guilt of their sin. Rather, they shifted the blame, refused to take responsibility. Eve blames the serpent, and Adam, in a surprising twist, finds a way to blame both God and Eve. He says, "The woman who you gave me, she gave me the fruit." Some interpretations do allow for the possibility that Adam and Eve may be contrite. The botanists among you may already know that fig leaves contain an enzyme called ficin, which, when touched, can cause severe skin irritation. So, Irenaeus points out, there were many other trees that would have irritated his body less. Adam, however, in awe of God, made clothing that matched his disobedience. Be that as it may, God clothed them in clothes that are more practical and less irritating than fig leaves. I have to think that God could have smote them and started all over again. The building materials were still there. Mud, breath, ribs. But God decides to continue to be in relationship with these disobedient creatures, albeit in a new way. And a reminder here that the results of their disobedience were not in God's original plan for creation. God did not intend for men and women to be unequal. God did not intend for our relationship with the land to be adversarial. These are a consequence of life outside the garden after their shared disobedience. So we keep telling this story as a reminder of our propensity for bad decisions and God's grace. And one response I have to this story is, so if we are creatures who are regularly tempted, is there a way out? Or are we destined to keep being misled by the half-truths and half-lies of the serpents around us? And as people who follow Jesus and claim to be saved by Jesus, is there another way? Our second lectionary text for today also gives us the story of Jesus tempted in the wilderness. Unlike Adam and Eve, Jesus is able to withstand temptation. But it's worth saying that these particular temptations, bread after fasting for 40 days, religious power, and political power, would have had some real appeal. Richard Rohr notes that temptations are always good things, otherwise we would not be tempted. Jesus could have kick-started his career as the Messiah if he'd jumped off the temple roof and been caught by angels. That would have gotten people's attention. But Jesus is able to see the temptations for what they are, superficial invitations to power, not within God's plan. Jan Richardson writes, intended to entice and distract him, the temptations have the converse effect of helping him clarify what is at his core, which is a reliance on and a relationship with God. It doesn't make him immune to temptation, but it gives him a way to look at the temptation straight on and ask, what is behind this? What are the deeper longings here? And is there a better way to meet those? This Lenten season, we would do well to examine our own temptations and ask, what do they say about us? What is the impulse behind them? Our temptations can tell us something about what is missing in our life. What are we hungry for? Is it relationships and a sense of who we are in community? Facebook is pretty good at filling those hungers for a little while. It tells us you matter, people like you, and you're a part of something bigger. And that's partly true, but it doesn't fill those hungers in the long run. And in many cases, it's a distraction from doing the things that actually feed us, that actually make us a part of community. Are we hungry to be known and loved, to avoid pain, to feel less, to be filled? Our society is happy to provide solutions to all of those problems, in the short run at least, with pornography, consumerism, Netflix, habitual snacking, alcohol, rise and roll donuts. These solutions will, over time, leave us feeling empty. Temptations can be illuminating when we look at them head on and ask, what are the goods here? But recognizing that only God is capable of filling our deepest longings. As Augustine wrote, you have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our heart is restless until it rests in you. Made in God's image, with God's divine spark within us, we are creatures built for longing. Barbara Grizzity Harrison writes, when Eve bit into the apple, she gave us the world as we know the world, beautiful, flawed, dangerous, full of being. Even the alienation we feel from God as a direct consequence of her fall makes us beholden to her. The intense desire for God, never satisfied, arises from our separation from God. Without the genetically transmitted knowledge of good and evil that Eve's act of radical curiosity sowed in our marrow, we should have no need of one another, of a one and perfect other. Eve's legacy to us is the imperative to desire. So part of what we inherit from her is this memory of and longing for closeness with God and a return to that relationship as it was intended to be. And temptations are easy fixes or distractions from that true longing to be with God, a God who has committed to loving us and clothing us no matter what. And part of that longing for God, I think, is also a longing for the world to be as it should be. That brings me to the Jewish notion of tikkun olam. The Hebrew phrase tikkun olam means world repair. In modern Jewish circles, tikkun olam has become synonymous with the notion of social justice or the pursuit of social action. But the idea has been around for a long time. The concept that we have a moral duty to society originates in the Torah. In Deuteronomy, God commanded Israel, follow justice and justice alone. Amos commands the people, hate evil, love good. Establish justice in the gate and let righteousness flow like an ever-flowing stream. 2 weeks ago, Don Blosser exhorted us to seek out and stay on the God path, a path that leads toward right action, toward partnering with God in the justice-seeking, peacemaking work that Christ modeled, the work of being world repairers. We have an ancient memory of the world as it should be, and we know that things are not as they were meant to be. So ours is the creative work of repairing and mending. I was thinking about storylines that involve characters magically repairing things that need fixing. The first one I could think of was in Mary Poppins. This is one of the few movies that our family owned growing up, so we watched it quite a bit. And in one scene, Mary Poppins decides that Jane and Michael need to clean up their nursery. And although initially they're reluctant, she teaches them how to do it by snapping and singing A Spoonful of Sugar. We loved watching Jane and Michael's clothing fly through the air, fold itself, and then put itself away in the drawers, and watching their toys march back into the toy box, and the toy box closes on them while Mary whistles a cheerful tune. I also saw it recently, though, in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. This is the most recent movie that takes place in the Harry Potter universe. There's this great evil that has wreaked havoc on New York City, a monster created out of self-loathing by a disturbed young wizard. In the aftermath of the destruction, all of the magical people walk purposefully through the streets of the city with their wands, repairing the damaged buildings and roads. Bricks and broken glass fly through the air back to their places. Roads even themselves out again, while a magical rain, which washes away humans' memories of the event, falls around them. I watched it last fall, and after watching that scene, I wrote on my phone, repair, mend. I wanted to use it, and I did use it in our Advent prayers. You may have heard some of that language before, because it spoke to me. This is what we're called to be about. There is something deeply satisfying about seeing everything returned to its proper place with the flick of a wand or the whimsical snap of a nanny's fingers. We long for this ability, the ability to mend what has been broken and repair what has been destroyed. We are hungry for a world that has been made right. Especially today, we look around and we feel like we are so far from Eden. How did we get here? And how can it ever be made right? Without magic, how can we fix all the hurting and brokenness? I think that this is where the spark of creation that burned within Eve, that imprint of the divine in each of us, comes in. It gives us the imagination and creativity to remember a world where everything is in its place, where everyone is in their place, where everyone has a place. The spark motivates us to take our job seriously with God as co-creators and co-redeemers. And we do this in many different ways. God's divine spark manifests itself differently in each one of us. We participate in this work when we tell these stories to our children about the good world that God made. We do it when we use our imaginations to create beautiful things. We do it when we work to ensure that all people have access to basic rights and equality. When we introduce new ideas and ways of being to eager students. When we take to the streets and bear witness to injustice. When we slow down enough to listen for God's voice amidst the chaos. When we take a moment to savor the fruits of creation, the actual fruits like ripe peaches and fresh strawberries. All of these and more are ways that we claim our full humanity as creatures made in God's image and live into the world as God intended. Dressed only in the animal skins God provides, we gather with others to do the work of repairing the world, making it as it should be. And as we do this, we recognize we will never do it perfectly. We will continue to succumb to temptations, but that is never the end of the story. In fact, it is usually just the beginning. May the God who clothed Adam and Eve continue to give us what we need to survive in this blessed and broken world, until the time when all of creation is restored to its original goodness. Amen.